Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. Our show is brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? This week we have a panel of three, which is quite a rarity for us because lately we've had a panel of one. It's just been Jonathan and I doing the show, and I can only take so much of Jonathan, just me, by my lonesome. So I got a couple of guys coming here and gang up on Jonathan today. Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor, Crossroads Valley Chapel here in Frederick. Imam Zaki Kauser, the Southeast region of the Ahmadiyya, a Muslim community. And Dr. Khaled Ahmad Atta, the national secretary, or a national secretary for the Ahmadiyya community. And if this name Ahmadiyya rings any bells, you've been paying any attention at all to the news, I'm going to tell you what this show is not about, but first I'm going to pontificate for a moment about a couple of things that occur to me with the whole Walkersville land issue. There's some farmland in Walkersville, 200 and some odd acres. The Ahmadiyya are looking to buy that land and turn it into a retreat. There are some people that are opposed to that for various reasons. This is not a political show. I don't really have much of a political opinion. You know, those who are anti-growth and don't want anything to come whatsoever, I can respect that. Those that are pro-growth and think it'll be important for business and that sort of thing, I can respect that opinion. I don't have a particular dog in that fight, at least not in this context. But I do want to say, I had a chance to listen to the Frederick Forum show with Blaine Young that airs on Saturdays a couple of weeks back, and he addressed this issue. He had Khalil El-Shazli from the Frederick Islamic Society
on
the show. Yes. And we've had him on the show, I don't know, a dozen times.
Yep.
And I thought he represented well, at least a Muslim perspective on that issue. But there were some callers to that show that troubled me because I don't know that they would call themselves Christian. But if they call themselves Christian, they should be ashamed. So I just want to say, if you want to be discriminatory, you want to be bigoted, you want to be intolerant of having somebody as your neighbor, somebody that doesn't see eye to eye on every single point that you have, then you need to go back to the scriptures and see what the Word of God tells you on how you're supposed to live your life. That is not what the Christian behavior is supposed to be. If you're truly anti-growth, and you don't want anybody to come no matter what, that's cool. That's a political issue, and Christians can hold that view.
Sure.
But if you are using that as a shield to hide some sort of, you know, Archie Bunker bigotry or something, I don't have any patience for that. That is not Christian, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that I feel like has been so important is in terms of our definition of what is American, however Christian our roots were, we certainly weren't into just shutting down points of view just because we disagreed with them. And I'm of the opinion, and I think that's the point of the whole show, that let's bring the debate right out in the public and let everybody hear what everybody has to say and decide for themselves. And I think when people do that kind of thing, it's the sound of freedom, Thomas Jefferson says. And,
now, that
and
said,
I'd like to hear that sound.
I believe that all Muslims, the Ahmadiyya, whoever, I don't care, all Muslims, all of those who aren't Christians are wrong. Okay? I think they're theologically wrong, and I think there are eternal consequences for that. And so we will talk about those things. So I'm not saying that we can't have disagreements, but how are you going to have a conversation with somebody if you're not going to allow them to come into your community?
Yeah, let's disagree, let's do it publicly, and let's have at it.
So that's what this show is about. So today we're going to talk about, and there's a couple of things with this that we need to clarify.
Okay.
Because you hear Muslim, you hear Islam, and you think, oh, I know what that means. And I don't think we really know what that means. And usually the public debate, the public discourse that we hear, it falls along two lines.
Yeah.
You've got the good, peaceful Muslims, and you've got the wacko, radical, fundamentalist terrorists who fly planes into buildings Muslims. And it's as simple as that.
And you guys aren't actually either of them.
And it's not as simple as that. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. It's not as simple as that.
Yeah, yeah.
The Ahmadiyya, as
this
I understand it,
yes.
And we'll let you guys, fill in the details. But as I understand it, you're a real significant minority in Islam. There are 1.something billion professing Muslims around the globe. And, well, I don't know, was it maybe a million of them are Ahmadi?
Tens of millions. So
tens
of millions.
Still, what is that? I don't know.
It's a percent?
A couple of percent, maybe?
Very low percentage.
Really, it's a really very small minority group within. Now you have the faith has its roots in Pakistan, but is now, right, as I understand it, but is now, I don't know if outlawed is the right word, but is really horribly
persecuted in Pakistan.
Yeah. In fact, isn't that true that they're persecuted literally in every Islamic nation around the world?
Almost every. They're getting there. Yeah, we're trying to fight that off, but the intelligent Islamic nations don't do that. But it did start, and it's kind of spreading, so we're trying to fight that out.
Yeah,
especially in Pakistan, and they kind of took it overseas. They're trying to get it in Indonesia as well.
And in fact, it kind of was birthed in Pakistan, right?
It was, yeah.
Go ahead, yes.
The community was founded in India in a town called Qadian, and that was year 1889.
1889.
Correct. And since the partition of subcontinent took place in 1947, the headquarters moved to Pakistan in a town called Rabwa. So
it originally was birthed, actually, is it in India?
That's correct.
Yeah. Which is in the Kashmir Mountains area, which is the border with Pakistan, kind of close.
Yeah, that's the
that's an American geographical,
yes, we're all
blunder,
victims of the public education
not.
System.
Yes, yes.
Well, Qadian is not too far from Kashmir. It's,
got you.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
By the way, to help our listener, the first non-regular guest on the show's voice that you heard was that of Imam Zaki Kauser, and then the most recent voice you heard that wasn't John Schweitzer's was that of Dr. Khaled Ahmad Atta, so that you can try to figure out who's talking. Like you'll remember that. But
one's an imam and one's the doctor. The imam is
you
a.
To say imam before I go. Or
is a young man about our age. The doctor is.
You know, as you put it, Christianity started out very small as well, and it took a big change for it to spread.
Sure.
So we believe we're very similar to Christians. We believe just as the first Messiah came, Christ, and he guided the people, and they were called Christians. We believe in a Messiah who's come, and very similarly, we are a small minority right now. But we believe there will come a time when just as Christianity spread across, our faith will also spread in a very peaceful, nice manner, but then we will be also in majority.
And I do want to talk about some of the differences between what you believe and what, for the context of this discussion, we'll call Jonathan Schweitzer an Orthodox Christian.
Sure.
But
I do want to come back to the point where you made was there are peaceful Muslims and then there are violent Muslims.
Right.
The first point I'll make is as soon as you turn to violence, you're not a Muslim anymore. So those people aren't Muslims. They claim and they're trying to hijack the religion of Islam and trying to use it because it's really easy to get somebody emotional about the religion. So that's why it's a it's
But a you scheme. Would agree that there's a significant amount of people out there
There's a significant
that have
amount of ignorant people out there who are using
this kind of
who are
Islam.
Using this religion to influence people and try to get their political agendas across.
Sure,
and
sure.
They are not Muslims.
Sure.
As soon as you turn to violence, you're not a Muslim anymore.
There's a couple of distinctions that come to my mind. I spoke with Dr. Atta about these. You know, every orthodox interpretation of Islam, the major schools of orthodox interpretation will agree that if a Muslim converts away from Islam to another religion, then he forfeits his life. In fact, I know a guy. I've spoken with a guy personally who was speaking with Prince Charles and all of the leaders of the Islamic community in Great Britain at the time. And he said this to Prince Charles. Prince Charles looked at all the Muslim guys that were there, and he said, "Is this true?" And they all kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, "Yeah, it's true."
That's very sad if they did, because that is not in any way. They cannot prove that from the Quran in any way.
Nevertheless, you would agree that there's many that do attempt to prove that.
That's one way they're trying to keep their faith safe, they think, but they're not.
They're
actually, you know, scaring people away because they feel, if I convert and if I change my mind, I can't even go back.
Sure.
It's not true in any way, because the Quran itself says if somebody converts and he converts back, you know, preach to him, and if he converts back, preach to him again.
And so this is one of the major distinctions between what the Ahmadis believe and what many that call themselves Orthodox believe.
I'm thinking most Muslims agree with this.
Agree with which
with
part?
The fact that there's no death penalty for apostate.
Okay, well, but I don't understand then why so many of them would agree, like, say, you know,
I don't know what
Prince
kind of group
Charles
he had with him over there, but if you go to a normal Muslim and ask him, I'm pretty sure they're going to say no, it should not be. It wouldn't be humane. It wouldn't make sense.
Well, I would agree
because
that
the,
it's not
the
humane.
The Quran itself, it says there's no compulsion in religion, and I'll call that compulsion. Okay,
without a doubt.
Exactly. So that's how can you say there's no compulsion in religion, but if you convert out of Islam, you're dead? That would make no sense.
Now, is it fair to go Muslims so far as to say that the Ahmadiyya community is pacifist? Or you're not quite that anti violence sounds like a negative
word. No, we're very anti-violence. Our founder, our imam, he told us clearly that this is not the day and age for violence. That's it. Violence is over. Now, the way you refute somebody is by the pen, by education, by knowledge, by proofs. That's how you're going to... This is the time for discussion, for knowledge and education. The time for fighting and stuff is over.
Okay? So can the Ahmadiyya community, can members of the Ahmadiyya community join military forces?
Of course. We have people in the American Army
right now.
Okay,
so you're not pure pacifist along those lines then.
We do hold the fact that if a time comes when you do need to defend yourself, of course you have to defend yourself. You have to defend your religion, your family,
sure,
your country, of course.
Sure.
So we do have people in the U.S. Army actually in Iraq right now.
Sure.
There's a gentleman in Frederick whose son is in the Army right now.
Okay.
So we stand by that.
Yeah.
However, we do not believe that you should be against your own country. If you're living in America, you should not be thinking against your country. Mm. And if you really are that way, then you should leave. Simple as that.
You see, more than that, the word Islam itself is from peace.
Okay.
It means peace physically in every essence of the fact. So violence is completely in negation of what Islam stands for. So there is no room for violence at all.
Okay, now I was under the understanding that either Muslim or Islam was the word for submission.
Absolutely. You know, the word Islam has several meanings.
Oh.
And one of them is peace.
Oh, okay.
It's a message of peace.
What are the other meanings to the word Islam? Peace, submission.
I'll fill that one in.
Yeah, yeah.
It means to give yourself over to someone. And we're referring to God here. So the first is give yourself over to God. And then it's peace and submission.
Okay.
So submission to the will of God is the real translation. But another understanding of the word...
So it's peace through submission to the will of God.
There you go. Because we believe without the will of God, without God, you can't have peace. And this is not just talking about physical peace in the world. It's talking about peace with yourself.
Sure.
Peace of mind. Peace with your family. Peace in society. Peace with God. So all of those are only possible when you have, you know, God with you.
And actually, I wouldn't call myself a Muslim, but I would agree from a Christian perspective that that peace stems from submission to the will of God and participation in the will of God. And so in that sense, I think I would agree with the big idea behind peace that you talk about, though, of course, I would add Christ in that whole scenario.
Of course. But you understand the point that without God, there can be no peace.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, what else? What are the other things that separate you guys from the,
you kept referring
Orthodox.
To that, so I'll explain it now
good.
A little bit.
No, this is good.
Why do those guys in Pakistan hate you so much?
Exactly. Why do they hate us? The reason is we are a new community in the sense that we're 100 and some years old.
Okay.
And that's when we were started.
Yep.
And our history shows of complete nonviolence. We are very, very peaceful.
And the research
community
that I've done, I think, backs that up.
It backs that up, right. Even though we were persecuted in Pakistan, we didn't fight back. We moved. A lot of us moved. That's how most of us came to the United States. And we believe that violence is not the answer. So that's the first thing.
Okay, so that's
thing.
The major thing is that you swear off violence in the name of religion.
Right. Uncalled for violence. Defense, those are fine.
Yeah.
But those only in the situation where there's an imam who says, yes, now it is a time because you're almost going to die and you have to defend yourself. Then we say, yeah, of course. But
that's similar to the Christian just war idea.
Exactly.
Is defensive.
Defensive.
You know, and it's never against innocent people.
Last hope, no other option.
All those kinds of things.
Exactly. So we stand
So that's
back.
A major distinction
between
you and
the
Orthodox.
Other Muslims and us.
Okay,
yes.
What else?
The other one is obviously that we believe the Messiah of this day and age has come. And he has come and he's taught us all of the true understandings, we believe, obviously, of the Quran. Which say that apostates should not be killed and this kind of violence is not called for in this day and age and all of these other points. So the greatest distinction between us and the other Muslims is the fact that we believe in a Messiah who has guided us rightly in every aspect of our life.
And actually, you believe that Messiah was not the return of Jesus Christ because you
physically,
believe that Jesus Christ actually... You believe he died in 120 somewhere in the mountains of Kashmir or something, right?
He passed away, right.
But you believe then that the term Messiah would return was more of an allegorical description of a figure that would, you know, arrive at a certain time in history.
Would do pretty much the same thing that the first Messiah did,
which is very interesting to me because it seems like what the Messiah has done for the Ahmadi community has taken them from being more law-oriented to being a little bit more grace-oriented in their approach to both the extension of the religion and in their approach to even, you know, basic law. Like, for example, do you guys approach Sharia law differently? Sharia law being, you know, Muslim law.
Right. This word has been taken out of context a lot. Okay.
Good.
So Sharia law in this day and age means, do all the really bad stuff that Islam says. No, Sharia law is between you and God, first of all.
Okay, you're talking about according to an Ahmadiyyan perspective.
Obviously, I want to make that clear.
Sorry.
Right?
Good,
yeah,
good.
This is our
not necessarily
perspective
the Orthodox.
On the Sharia law.
Yeah,
right.
Good.
Sharia
okay.
law tells you be righteous, pray to God, give charity, be kind to your neighbor. That's the first part of Sharia law, and that's between you and God. So we stand by all of that. That you have to do all of these things.
Okay.
Okay. So the Muslim law is for you, and it teaches you how to live your life, how to be a righteous man.
Okay, whereas, and so the classic idea in the Western mind is that Sharia law means that you stone the adulterer, you know, and we hear these stories of stoning adulterers, or that eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, you
right.
know, so if
now
you go to a Muslim country,
thing, right?
you're gonna see all these people with hands cut off, you know, and eyes gouged out or something like that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, like I was talking to you the other day, Sharia is something not really coined up lately. It's been there for a while. Whatever the God's commandment or law, like they've been told in the Old Testament, they were also Sharia. Sharia means God's law.
So, so again, your point is you apply, and actually Khalil did this when we had him on, you apply the idea of Sharia law to Sharia, as you guys pronounce it, rolling the R,
Sharia.
Is something that is that say Moses and Abraham, all the way back to Adam and Eve, everybody that ever has done anything right is actually submitting in their heart to Sharia law, God's law. And so in your mind, that's what it entails. And there's definitely some very legalistic elements of that, that we in the West, you know, have developed this caricature of Muslims, you know, that it means all these harsh things, you know, the women have to wear, you know, all the certain kind of dress and that kind of thing. How much is that true for the Ahmadis, you know, versus not so true? And like, what's the difference?
The two. Yeah, there are some personal things, like wearing the veil.
Okay.
That's your personal thing. The government cannot enforce
that. So some Ahmadis would actually wear that.
No, most Ahmadis do wear that.
Living
in the United States, I can tell you myself, my wife, she wears it.
Oh,
and it's her choice.
Okay.
I don't force her. The government doesn't force her. It's her choice.
So are there
God,
any,
in a sense, does tell her.
Are there any
and she believes
Ahmadis that do not?
There are, probably. And that's their choice. That's between them and God. But our community does insist that you should do it because it's God's law. Just as every Christian will say, you know, do what Christ says and do what the Bible says, right?
Okay.
So we do tell them to do it. Do they all do it? We hope they do. But if someone does not do it, we don't say, oh, you're not an Ahmadi anymore. That's between them and God.
What about like multiple wives?
Multiple wives, again, that is a permission given by God under the circumstances where there are too many women and not enough men after wars, after
which
a famine.
Apparently is true all the way around the world. There's 51-49%
Yeah, always.
Split.
It's always like that.
So
the Quran also says, but only do it if you can be completely fair with both of them. And then a few verses later it says, but trust me, it'll be impossible for you to be completely fair with both of them.
Okay.
So it's saying it's an option which is available in extreme circumstances. It's not,
so, like here in the United States, you wouldn't necessarily
every Muslim in the world can have up to four
that.
Wives. All right, that's an option. I can legally do that in my faith. How many Muslims actually do have more than one wife?
Okay.
You'll see, it's less than 0.1%.
So
and even those who do have it, you'll see there's a need. There's a reason why they have it. Maybe their wife, the first wife, can't have children. So instead of divorcing her and leaving her to die, right, not taking care of her, they have an agreement where okay, we'll have two wives and we'll have children and we live together. So she has
one
to
thing
agree.
That I noticed as I was talking with a doctor Atta the other night was that there seems to be in at least the Ahmadi approach to law, Sharia, a very pragmatic orientation that I don't know that I necessarily have picked up in my discussions with others. You know, you're a little bit more inclined to rationalize it out than to just say, well, this is what it says, so therefore we have to, you know, there's a little bit more of a, you know, well, let's apply it to each situation as is reasonable or common sense.
Because we have a living imam who tells us that, okay, in this day and age, this is kind of what it means. This is the understanding of it. And they have a 1400-year-old understanding of it, and most of the stuff that we have today didn't exist at that time. Right?
Right,
so we have
right.
A
which is another thing that seems to be very, very clear to me is that Ahmad, who's the original promised Messiah?
Mirza Ghulam Ahmad. I know you're not going to repeat that one.
What's Ahmed the best way to say it? I'll just call him Ahmad.
Ahmad. Okay.
The original Ahmad. He seemed to have this clear perspective that societal change had happened, you know, that there was a modern world, and so law and ethics and society and economics and all that had changed significantly enough that there needed to be some kind of a adaptation of, you know, what used to be ancient Islam for the last 1400 years to a more modern approach to Islam, which seems to be characterized by, you know, more rational, a little bit more scientific? Like, don't you guys believe in evolution?
Oh, we do, clearly.
You know, scientifically
and
those kinds of things?
Don't think that the Quran is stuck and it cannot change. Quran is such a wonderful book that it's ever-changing. It's evolving. Meaning the understandings of it change with your needs.
Whereas some of these more fundamentalist Muslims
are... That's it. It's not changing.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, you get the sense with you know, all the majority of Muslims that I've interacted with that they're trying to live in 7th century Arabia, wherever they live around the world. You would agree that it seems like that's the case, whereas the Ahmadis are trying to say something totally different. Let's adapt and grow
into the
future.
That's the beauty, that's the blessing that we have, the Imam, who has brought us out of a lot of ignorance and other stuff. For example, just to give you, you know, hint of it, eating of pig, for example, is forbidden, according to Sharia, to Muslims.
Okay.
But within the Quran, it permits that if it's to save a life, if there are circumstances attending, that you must
eat. So you're starving to death,
you have
is pigs, you're allowed
to
eat it. Okay.
See? For example, fasting
in
the month of Ramadan is prescribed to all Muslims. But for the sick and the elderly and the pregnant women, for example, it is permitted. You know, they can have they can do it afterwards if they recover from illness or after the pregnancy or whatever.
But there's a little bit of flexibility based on what's going on as opposed to just an absolute.
But the thing is that there are people amongst the Muslims who insist that no, whatever the condition, you must fast. Mm. Whether you're pregnant or sick, even dying, you must fast.
Sure.
But the Imam of this age has enlightened us on this aspect. Now, look, Sharia permits you to do this.
I was just telling Troy the other day that when he's fasting, it doesn't matter if he's pregnant, he still has to keep his fast up. He was having a hard time with that, you know, just between you and I.
Basic thing he explained was religion isn't there to make your life miserable. It's there to make your life beautiful, give you a connection with God. So religion isn't there to make it so tough that no one can do it.
Okay.
It's there so it's practical so everyone can do it.
Let me jump in for a second because I want to reset just a little bit.
Okay.
We want to explain what's going on. Jonathan Schweitzer is a pastor at Crossroads Valley Chapel, back on the show again this week, and joined by Imam Zaki Kauser with the Southeast Region of the Ahmadiyya community, and Dr. Khaled Ahmad Atta, a National Secretary for the Ahmadiyya community. The Ahmadiyya Muslims are... I don't know if you call it a sect. Is that the right?
Sure.
Are a very minority sect within Islam. And one question I want to clarify. It seems like, I think I know what your answer is going to be. I'm wondering if you could answer for others. Others in Islam.
Orthodox.
You call them Muslims?
Of course we do.
Do they call you Muslims?
Most of them do. Some choose not to, but that's their choice. We believe, you know, you can't say someone is not a Muslim. Everybody has the right to claim to be a Muslim or not. That's for God to decide.
The point is, when you lived in Pakistan, if you called yourself a Muslim, you were telling me, wouldn't they actually throw you in prison for that?
It would be. But I lived there for 7 years.
Sure.
And I grew up in the States, so I went back there. And if you go to an average person and you say, you know, I'm a Muslim, he's got no issue with you.
Sure.
It's usually those fanatics and those people who have some personal, you know, benefit from it. That's the ones who are going out and making all this noise. But I hope what I felt was that an average Pakistani doesn't really... care about that.
Am I wrong, maybe, or is this, you know, the reason there's this divide between the Ahmadiyya community and the Orthodox fundamentalist? This is the classic liberal conservative debate, right? Just in a different context.
I feel like in the States we don't have this problem. I mean, I'll walk up to any Muslim, hug him, and he'll call me a Muslim brother too. And that shows that internally, they don't have an issue. As soon as they step out of the borders of Pakistan, they're perfectly fine.
Sure.
So I think it's more within Pakistan, the fundamentalists are in there who are trying to mindwash the people.
Well,
but in the United States, we have a wonderful,
loving relationship with all the Muslims.
This brings us to another major
distinction between the Ahmadi community and the rest of the Muslim community. It has to do with the separation of church and state and the freedom of conscience. You know, speak to that a little bit. What do they believe and what do you believe?
Well, again, I don't think
because we're going to have an unsatisfactory amount of time to try to get into that.
We respect all Muslims and we hope they respect us as well. We love all Muslims and we love, you know, all Christians and everybody in the world. But I don't want to come across as, oh, yeah, all other Muslims are wrong and we are right. I don't want to say that or they're all bad and we're good. No. It's for everyone to decide between them and God.
The attempt to make the distinguishing characteristics, to identify the distinguishing characteristics, is more that there are, again, these caricatures that I think are in many Americans' minds that distinguishing theologically why you guys are different or how you're different. I think it's very helpful to me because then I can come away and say, oh, they're not that. Oh, they're not that. You know, it's kind of like a checklist. They're not that. They're not, you know. And as a result, I can say, okay, maybe there's not as much danger there as I might have thought that there was.
Okay. Well, I think we'll let Jonathan, if you're willing to do next week's show with us, we'll do the church and state thing on next week's show. And then if time allows at some point, it might be nice to talk about the whole Messiah issue and the difference between the Christian idea of Messiah and the Ahmadi idea of the Messiah. So those might be directions. So if you want to mark your calendars and listen next week. Now, by the way, mark your calendar for tomorrow. We've got some improvements on WFMD.com. I have been promised that tomorrow, today's show, will be listened, you will be able to listen to it as a podcast on the website. So if you missed part of the show early or you want to relive this really dynamic conversation that we've had, or you have a friend or neighbor who might have you think would be interested
in
dating.
Maybe you just missed Troy's voice in the morning.
So with I've been told that within 24 hours, that every show will then be on the website to be listened to. So that's pretty cool. And there are a number of shows already archived up there. Mm-hmm. And I think all of them by now should be labeled. If not, they will be shortly all labeled to easily identify what the topics are and who the guests are and that sort of thing. So tell a friend, wake the neighbors, all that sort of stuff. You're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. It's been brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? Thank you, John Schweitzer from Crossroads Valley Chapel and from the Ahmadiyya community, Imam Zaki Kauser and Dr. Khaled Ahmed Atta. I'm Troy Skinner. Thanks for listening. God bless.